Thanks for joining us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Time to talk taxes with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, have been in the tax business for over 30 years. They serve individuals, they consult other tax professionals, and they teach tax seminars, have taught tax seminars around the country. What questions do you have about filing your taxes? Join the conversation. You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mary Mellum, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Merry Christmas, and it's a wonderful season.
It is indeed. And taxes are due in April. What should you start thinking about, or why maybe should you be thinking about them now?
Well, there are a few things that people can do before the end of the year. Most specifically, charitable contributions. And before December, on or before December 31st, charitable contributions made, if you itemize this year, it's a good time to do that. You can do charitable, what we call qualified charitable distributions, money from your IRA directly to the charity that would help lower your income. But it's getting close. You'd be having to talk to your financial planner and make sure that that delivery can happen before the end of the year. Yeah. Also, paying property taxes before the end of the year might be a good idea, but with some of the changes for next year, it may be better to leave them off this year and pay them after the first of the year. So lots of things to think about before the end of the year.
Darn, I already paid my property taxes in December. Why would it have been good for me, perhaps, to have waited?
Well, I think most people are aware that there was a tax. There was a piece of legislation, part of which was tax, that was passed by Congress on July 4th of this past year. And it has provisions that both affect 2025 and 2026. But the ones that begin with 26 could be things like the standard deduction. Well, a lot of those things, I should say, those things happen this year. And so preparing, it's too late this year to pay double property taxes. And we have an increased, what we call SALT limitation. So on the tax portion of your Schedule A, we were limited to $10,000 maximum between sales tax, withholdings, property taxes, all of the state tax kind of things. Last year, we were limited to $10,000. Because of the tax legislation passing, that number goes up to $40,000 for 2025 and 26. Well, for a few years after that as well. But looking at this year, you'll be able to take a larger deduction. Some people used to double up on their property taxes, but we didn't know about it when you paid your 24 taxes, so you couldn't do that. So next year is the first opportunity to double up on the property taxes, so to speak.
Got it. Well, maybe one question more before we go to Jason in Madison and John in Madison and some others who are calling in. What are the most common ways you see people confused about their taxes? Or what are the most common problems and solutions people run into as they do their taxes?
Well, making sure that they have all the documents to report all of their income properly. And the documents typically don't come out until the end of January. So getting all of those things together, deciding who your dependents are, if in fact you have dependents, and then putting all of that stuff together. Those are, you know, probably where you start with it. And then when people have unusual situations, it just depends on what that situation is, where you have to go from there.
Jason in Madison, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi, Larry. I made a charitable, qualified charitable donation in 2025, and I'm wondering out of my IRA, and I'm wondering how I report that.
That's a very good question, Jason. When you get your 1099-R this year, it will tell the total amount that came out of your IRA account. The amount that went directly to charity that you did not receive is a subtraction from that amount. So in the, I believe it's 14A box, you'll have the gross amount. In 14B, you'll put the number after you subtract what you sent directly to charity.
And the part that you send back to, or that you sent to charity, does that then not turn up on your total income?
That is correct. The amount that went directly from the account to the charity. Remember, you can't get the money and then give it to the charity and use this QCD treatment. So it had to go directly from your account to the charity, not to you and then the charity. And you do not pay taxes on the amount that you sent to charity. Now, it's if you got the money and sent it to charity, you'd still get a deduction for it if you itemize. But this way, you get a deduction kind of right off the top. It lowers your adjusted gross income for other purposes, and it's a cleaner way of doing it. It could be a little bit more advantageous to do it that way than itemizing, and certainly if you don't have enough to itemize, then you don't have a benefit of that in 2025.
Mm.
The other thing that's important, this year the 1099-Rs have changed to include a box for QCD, and the tax return, the 1040, has a checkbox on the front of it where you check the box to indicate that it is a QCD, and that's why the difference between the 1099-R and what you're putting on and being taxed at.
Darren had emailed us. He's $35,000 in overtime this year he received. How much will this increase his refund?
The overtime, first of all, if he had $35,000 in overtime?
Yeah, $35,000.
Wow. Overtime is a little confusing this year. I mean, it's confusing to people because this information says all of my $35,000 is a deduction up to, and the overtime deduction is maxed at $12,500 for an individual. And again, with that, there are income limitations too. As a single person, it's $150,000 modified adjusted gross income, $300,000 for your joint owners. But it's not the $35,000 chances are that is his deduction. Chances are, unless the employer has told you exactly, it's the premium. If you're paid time and a half, your premium is about one-third of that $35,000. And the deduction based on that would be one-third of $35,000 or the $12,500, whatever that is, and you multiply that by your tax rate, and then that's how you're going to see it. So if I were to take $35,000 and divide it by three, that would be $11,666. And if you're in, let's say, the 22% tax bracket, that's going to mean about just over $2,500 extra refund.
All right.
So it is meaningful, but you need extra information to come to the right number.
John in Madison, your turn. Thanks, John, for calling.
And thank you for taking my call. I have two rather simple questions, I believe. Number one, what are the tax rates and what are the amounts of income, whether it be gross or adjusted income? Those rates and
where they change?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big question. To give you all of those numbers for this year, the rates go, there are seven tax brackets. They go from 10, they are 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, and 37%. And the rates change. There are different brackets for single, for married filing joint, for head of household, and married separate. And I would strongly suggest that it's best to go to the IRS website or even to Google and ask, type in the 25 income tax rates. And then you'll get the breakdown by filing status for all of those. And just for a couple of numbers to throw out, the 12% bracket is a popular tax bracket. It's the second lowest tax bracket, and the top bracket for a single person, and this is taxable income, goes between $11,925 and $48,475. Now, the joint tax bracket is basically doubling those numbers. So that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea, but if you go on and pull that, you'll get all of the numbers, and you can fit in wherever you are in that category.
Yeah, makes good sense. John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Linda and Matt in Platteville emailed us. She's a Wisconsin Retirement System recipient, and she's heard some of her pension is not tax-based on a new law passed this year in Wisconsin. Please clarify for Linda and others in the system.
Okay. What she's referring to is a deduction that Wisconsin has created. Actually, it's not a deduction. It is a tax credit, I believe. And Wisconsin this year has a retirement income subtraction. Not a credit, but a retirement income subtraction, and it applies to your retirement income if you are age 67 or older by the end of the year. The maximum retirement deduction that you can take is $24,000 if you're a single taxpayer and $48,000 if you both are retired and file a joint return. Now, this is huge, but there is an asterisk to it. And what I mean by that is that it's something that you have to weigh what's best for you, because the offset to it is if you take advantage of this deduction, you give up your right to take tax credits. And basically, here's what the rule says. The deduction, the cost of the deduction is that no tax credit that is listed in 71.104 of the U.S., of the Wisconsin tax statutes can be claimed. And for a seminar, I pulled up this list. And this list is pretty encompassing. So it's your property tax credit. It's your homestead credit. It's your armed forces credit, your health insurance credit, basically all the credits. You decide, is this deduction enough maybe to wipe out your income more than the credits would give you? So yes, it exists, and I'm glad that Linda reminded me of it. And it is available to anyone who is age 67 or older that has retirement income, which is different than IRA money. But it's something that you're going to have to decide what's best for me based on your particular situation.
Mary Mellum, our guest, and you can join in too at 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking taxes on the program with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and it's from Green Bay area, and it's certainly great to have her back with us. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Let's turn to Ted in Spooner, Wisconsin. Hi, Ted.
Yeah, hello. I recently got my property tax for in town, and it went up 286%. What can I do to have something done about that? That's crazy.
That is a large increase, 286%.
Now, that's unfortunately not anything to do with income tax as far as changing that, but just a side topic is I would contact your local taxing organization, your county. From what I understand, there is a time period where you can request a look at it or to challenge it, but it's usually there's a certain time frame for that, so I wouldn't put it off too long before I contacted them.
That seems like an almost unbelievable increase. Although mine went up pretty quite a bit myself, and I'm concerned as well in some ways. Ted, but get a hold of your local people and bring it up with them soon, sooner than later. Cheryl in Whitehall, we'll go to you. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
And what can we do for you? Cheryl, are you there? Oh, we lost Cheryl, I guess. She'll probably call back. I bet she just had a drop call. Jim in Wausau emailed us. He's read that the IRS treats taxes withheld from required minimum distributions as if they were paid on time quarterly, regardless of when they were made during the year. Is this true? Does Wisconsin treat them similarly?
Any withholding that is taken out of payroll checks, retirement accounts, anywhere, is considered made evenly during the year, even if you have all of the withholding taken out of your very last paycheck of the year. It is different than estimated tax payments where the governing agency, whether it's federal or state, picks it up on the date that they receive it, basically. So the answer to his question is yes. If it is withheld taxes, it will be considered paid timely during the year.
What if it's the required minimum distribution? What if you, let's say in January, you just decide to take the whole required minimum distribution and donate it?
Then there is no withholding. There is no tax on the amount that you donated, so you would be reporting it, but there's no need to have withholding because there wouldn't be anything taxable.
Makes sense. Andy in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Andy.
Hi. I have a question. Mary filed jointly. I'm over 67, so I can claim a $24,000 probably income adjustment credit, but my wife isn't. She's 65, so would that be, would neither one of us be eligible for the property tax credit or the married people credits, or because one of us are older, are we eligible for the other credits?
Or do you file jointly, Andy?
We do file jointly.
Yeah.
Andy, I haven't seen any worksheets with it. My guess is if you take the advantage of that deduction, that means that ring, that return is singled out from that. So, and I don't know that for sure. That is my educated guess with it. So, and then the option that I think Larry was kind of thinking about was married filing separate. But in Wisconsin, when you do married filing separate, because Wisconsin is a community property state or a marital property state, you're really taking both of your incomes and dividing it by two. So I would suggest that before you file your tax returns, you do a little bit more looking. I think as we see the instructions to the form and things, there'll be more information for us available than I have right now. This is a relatively new stance for the state. I didn't read anything about it until about October when they announced their new law. So still more information to seek out in that area.
There you go, Andy. Thank you for calling. Bill in Portage, we'll go to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi, this is Bill.
Hi, Bill. What's on your mind?
I'm interested in knowing the capital gains rate for income tax. I know it probably deals with the amount of income plus capital gains income. If she could speak a little bit to that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure. If you're talking, first of all, about federal capital gain rate, your federal capital gain rate is tied somewhat close. There are three rates for capital gains federally. There is a 0% rate, there is a 15% rate, and there is a 20% rate. The 0% rate is linked close to the 12% bracket. So if basically, and the numbers aren't exactly the same, the capital gain rates have their own numbers, but it's close to the capital, it's close to the 12% rate. So pretty close to, if you're in the 12% bracket, when you add your income plus your capital gain to it, if you stay within that number, and as I mentioned before, for a single person, that's about $48,000. I'm rounding the numbers a little bit. And about $96,000 for married couple. If your taxable income or your income, I should say your income, including your capital gains, is below that, you're not going to pay any capital gain for federal purposes. If your total income goes above that, chances are you're in the 15% tax bracket for capital gains. And so that number multiplied by 15% is what it's going to cost you. And then when you get in the higher tax brackets, I believe it's about the 35% tax bracket, then it becomes taxable at the 20% rate. And that the 35% rate tops out about $600,000. So you have to, if you sold the farm, so to speak, and made a lot of money in Wisconsin, you could easily be in the 20% tax bracket. But if you're selling stocks and bonds and, you know, just the normal things that we sell, most people are in the 0 or 15% tax bracket.
Bill, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. What if someone dies and they sell, you know, the farm has to be sold and there's, let's say, three people that are going to inherit? What would be the, would there be a, some sort of gains, tax gains that the people who receive the money would have to pay?
Okay. That's a fair question. If you inherit property, generally, the property is revalued at the date of death. And if you sell it close to, in a relatively reasonable time after death, there's probably little or no taxes due because your cost basis compared to what you sell it for, there isn't a lot of difference. The difference is what would be taxable. If, on the other hand, mom and dad decided to give you the farm before they died, the difference between what they paid for it and what it's worth at the time they give it to you, that if you sold it after they died and they gave it to you, there would be a much greater chance of paying taxes because they probably paid little in comparison to what it's worth now. So inheritance steps up the basis. Gift prior to death does not have the same effect.
Got it. Jim in Wisconsin Rapids, we'll go to you.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question actually is pretty relevant to what you just discussed, but this is a little different scenario. In the case of a person that passes away and his widow then has a piece of property and she decides she wants to sell it. Let's say in the original purchase was made back in the late 80s and now it's, 2026. So would she be responsible for capital gains from the time of the original purchase on that, or is it calculated based on the time of her spouse's death? So let's say he passed away in 2024, would the capital gains then just be calculated from 2024 to 2026, or does it go all the way back to the original purchase time?
Okay, Jim, I've got a little bit more complication to the situation or questions to ask you. First of all, who owned the property? Whose name was it deeded in?
I think it was in both their names.
Okay. If it's in both their names and we're past the date or it was retitled after Wisconsin became marital property, if all of those things happen, then when he died, the property is revalued for her at its fair market value, even though she's technically a half owner of that property. And if she sold it after he died, she'd probably have little taxes. Now, you need to, in the scenario you described, you need to do a little bit more checking because I believe 1986 is about the year that Wisconsin changed from separate property to marital property. And if it was purchased before that and not retitled, the rules might be that his part gets stepped up and hers doesn't. But you'd have to go back to the search of what really happened with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Jim, good luck with that search. And on to Elna in Madison. Hi.
Hello. I filed my taxes last year using IRS Free File. I know they've eliminated some of the ways to file. Is that one going to still be available?
I believe so. What they did eliminate was what was called Direct File. Now, Direct File was a program that the IRS paid for or supported itself. It was only around for a year or 2 years. The Free File program is a partnership with the IRS and different software providers. To be honest, I believe that partnership may still exist. The best way to do is go to irs.gov, type in file taxes, and see what comes up because the links come up through that itself.
Ah, that's a good, quick way to find out, Elna. Thank you for calling. And Mark in Wausau, what's on your mind?
About 3 years ago, I had an employer who basically wasn't paying the amount he'd take out of the check. He wasn't paying it in. He wasn't giving us pay stubs. And then the W-2 he made out at the end of the year was completely incorrect, off by thousands. I'm wondering if you have any input on what recourse we have and what we should actually pay on, with the amount that he reported or the amount that I actually made.
Well, the W-2s, if that is the gross amount that he paid you, that's what you have to report. If what it sounds like is he was delinquent on his payroll taxes, which includes any withholding you would have asked for and any Social Security, FICA, and Medicare that's asked for. And that's definitely an issue that the company has with the IRS. If they did not get withholding in your name from that employer, they're probably not going to give you credit for it at that point. But the employer is on the risk for that, and they would go back after him. So on your W-2 that he made at the end of the year, did he tell you how much was withheld?
He reported numbers that, like, what happened was it was like partway through the year, like about October, he stopped giving us the pay stubs and using an excuse why he didn't need to make them. Well, obviously he did need to make them. And then what he reported on, the actual amount, was what he had paid me up to that point. He never included, like, October and November, December. He never even reported it on the W-2.
Oh, so he didn't. So what's on your W-2 is not what you made totally.
Correct.
Okay. Here's another way around that. For you to be the honest person, you should report what's on the W-2. And then there is a form 4137 that says, you know, it wasn't all reported. Here's how much should have been on the W-2. And by the way, here's the withholding tax or the payroll taxes, my half of the Medicare and Social Security that should have been withheld. And you can pay in your part of it and be square with the government. Otherwise, if you don't report all of the income you received, then you're also not filing a correct return. But I would take a look at that form 4137. If he didn't report all of your income to the government, you can't ignore it just because he didn't do the right thing. And I hope that it's just a glitch in his system that he had reported the taxes that were held prior to that. I hope that he didn't just ignore those either. Because when you file the tax return, if things don't agree, the government will send you a letter back saying, we don't have any record of your W-2s. Please send us copies and all kinds of things like that.
Ooh.
That gets messy.
It sounds like a mess. Mark, do the right thing, I guess, is the answer here. Thank you very much for calling. Aaron emailed us. He's looking for tax tips and tricks for freelance workers.
There is the IRS. A freelance worker is basically a Schedule C person. So you're in your own business as an independent contractor. As far as the rules for that, it's the rules that cover a Schedule C person. And the IRS does provide publications for small businesses, for independent contractors. If you're looking for a listing of information, I would go to the IRS website and type in some different words like Schedule C or the type of business that you're in. You know, freelance could be a photographer, it could be a speaker, it could be a landscaper, any of that kind of thing. So whatever that area is in, I would to get help with the idea of what I might have spent or what I could take for deductions, you need to do a little bit of research in that area.
Yeah, makes sense. Tom and Toma, what's on your mind?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. You might have covered the subject already, and I apologize. I recently retired at the end of 2024. In 2025, my mortgage is paid off, and I received an escrow check to pay the property taxes in 2025. Should I pay those taxes this year prior to the end of 25, or should I wait till January? So basically, am I doubling up on taxes, paying property taxes?
Yeah.
Here's some things to think about. Without knowing all your numbers, I can't give you a, you know, a specific answer about it. But one question to ask yourself, did you itemize last year? And if the answer is no, I didn't itemize, how far away from itemizing, how much over the under the standard deduction were you? And if you weren't able to deduct all of your state taxes last year because of the $10,000 window, and you were relatively close to the standard deduction, not paying them this year would certainly make you take standard deduction in that case. And if you were fairly close, doubling up next year could get you over the top and make it better. So you've got to take a look at your own situation based on maybe your 24 tax return. Look to see if you were close to itemizing. And if you were close but didn't, could those property taxes, doubling them up, get you over the number? And if so, then it would be a good idea.
Yeah, makes very good sense. Tom, take a look. Our guest, Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin, Ashwaubenon and Tax Professionals. Great to have her with us. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. You could email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Mary Mellum, our guest today, as we talk taxes with her, Mary with Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Tomorrow on the show, George Malara is back to help you decode your dog's behavior. And we'll also talk about the hard work that goes into keeping Wisconsin's roads safe during the winter. Bob emailed us wondering, why is the 10 to 20% bracket jump, the largest increase in the IRS code? That seems like an unfair tax burden for wage earners in that bracket.
Okay, I'm not quite sure what I mean by what he means by the 10 to 20% jump, because the bracket goes from 10% up to 12%, and then, I see where going from the 12% to the 22% bracket is where he's seeing the jump. I can't tell you what the logic is. It's Congress that passed the tax brackets back in 2018 is when we had the change, and the old bracket was the 15% bracket, and it went up to, I believe it went 15 to 22% then. And so I don't know why they widened it. Sure, they had a reason. I don't know what it is.
Karen in Bailey's Harbor emailed, she received a surprise inheritance from a distant German relative. The estate was cashed out, and she is to receive a lump sum. Taxes and fees were taken in Germany. What is her tax obligation in the U.S.?
In the U.S., we are taxable on worldwide income. Now, inheritance oftentimes doesn't enter as a taxable event. It depends on where the inheritance came from. So in the U.S., if I inherit just a bank account that had $100,000 in it, chances are the $100,000 in the bank account is not going to be taxable to me. But if that $100,000 stayed in the bank account for 6 months before the estate was settled and it got to me, what would be taxable to me may be the interest that $100,000 earned in that time period from death to later. That's the easiest way I can explain what she's doing. Now, because it is from Germany, you're still taxable on your worldwide income. Anything that would be taxable basically in the United States, that same idea is going to be taxable even if you get it from a foreign country. The difficult part here is they don't have the same paperwork that we would expect from an inheritance. So she's going to have to find out how much of the money was, or where'd the money come from. If it were a retirement account that somebody didn't pay taxes on it, that could be a taxable event. We call it income in respect of a decedent. But if it's just, you know, an inheritance like, or just a blank sum that she got because it was a specific bequest rather than being in one of a certain number of heirs, that could make it not taxable at all. So there's more to the story before you can get a definite answer.
Yeah. Ron in McHenry, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hello. I have a question that I believe pertains to everybody who gets health care on the marketplace. And this is Form 8962, which is a reconciliation of the payments that you got at the end of the year with what you may owe, or maybe you were overpaid for that. And there's something on here that says SLCSP, which is second lowest cost silver plan. But Mary, what are they doing on this form? Why do they bring in that second lowest cost silver plan and sort of compare it with what you got in advance payment? What are they saying here? Is that second lowest cost plan sort of give you that maximum headroom that you could exceed your income by and still not owe the money?
First of all, good description of things. The 8962 is the premium assistance tax credit form. And first of all, you get a form from the government called the 1095A. On that 1095A, it tells the information that you need to put on that form. And it says, here's my total premiums for the insurance I've selected. Here's the silver plan numbers. And I use the silver plan number because oftentimes it's less than the actual premium. So you're getting a little bit of a benefit there. And you compare that to what you actually got for a benefit. And the benefit that you got, the subsidy, so to speak, is based on the income you told the people when you signed up for the insurance or renewed it. And that may be totally different than the income that you have. But what your subsidy comes out with is based on your real income. And the difference between the silver plan and what the subsidy you were entitled to is what you get, or what you should have paid. And if you didn't pay enough, that's where you either have to pay some more in, or if you overpaid, then you get some back. But it is a coordination of those numbers. In the upper part, it asks you what your income is and what percentage of the federal poverty level that is. And if you get over 400% of the poverty level in that top part of the form, if that number comes over 400% of the poverty level, then basically you got a subsidy that you didn't deserve, and that's where you have to pay it back. And if your relationship to the poverty level is equal to what you told them, then your subsidy might be perfect. And you get exactly, and, you know, there is no tax consequences. Ah. So I don't know if that shortened explanation helps you out, but it can be a complicated matter.
Yeah. Ron, thank you for calling. Joseph in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Joseph.
Hello. There, I had to get you off speaker. So I was separated a few years back, but we never finalized a divorce. And we had had a tax issue where it's fixed now, but we had a back year that was that we were having issues and had to refile. And so we had saved a couple of years, and we were going to do a couple of years at once. And when I went in to do that, I found out from my accountant that my separated or soon-to-be ex-wife had changed all of her W-2 information to get nothing taken out of her taxes, leaving me with, like, thousands of dollars that I owe the IRS. And she's not been responsive to, like, court orders and things to finalize this divorce. So I wonder, is there a way that you can file separated, even though you're still married? Is there a way that I can get out of this having to pay for somebody who hasn't lived with me in 3 years and their tax burden? I had always gotten a refund before. I'm a single father of two kids, and now I owe a whole bunch of money for the first time in my life at 46, and I guess I'm just at a loss of what to do.
Okay. First of all, Joseph, have you filed your tax returns in the past, or do you have some returns that you have not filed? I wasn't sure in what you
all
said.
All of my things are filed now.
Okay. So if all of them were filed now, did you file jointly with your ex-wife?
So originally, I think what happened was we filed jointly. Then I went in for the meeting to sign, and then I saw the huge amount of money that it said I owed. And then I asked the accountant if it was possible for me to just file separate but still married. He said I could, but then it still shows that I owe not nearly as much as it did before, but like a good couple thousand dollars. And I've always gotten a return before. I don't make that much, and I'm a widowed single father to one child and a divorced single father of another, and I have custody, and you know, so I mean,
Did you file the joint return, or have you not filed that year, or where are you with that year that you just talked about?
I believe he said that he filed it, but then when I got the return back, instead of it saying I owed like $10,000 for both of us, or we did, it said that just I owed a couple thousand dollars, and it's like, well, why should I owe anything? I've never owed money on taxes.
Okay. The reason you might owe something is if you filed separately and you did not live together at all during the year, then you're only responsible for your earnings. But the rules for married separate are a little bit different in the sense that there are some tax benefits that will not help a married separate person. And if that was maybe what happened to your return, it's possible that that's why you see a difference between being a joint return and getting a refund back and getting to take advantage of some of those benefits and not. And it's just, married separate is an alternative, but it's not always the best tax advantage. Certainly there are other reasons for filing married separate, like not being responsible for that other person's numbers. So I think that they probably filed you separate, and it's just the consequences of it. Do your children live with you, or are they older?
No, they live with me.
Okay. Did you talk to him about head of household, or did you have that discussion with him at all?
No.
Because if you don't live together and you have children that are your dependents or qualifying children, you may qualify to be head of household rather than married separate, and that usually helps out a little bit with it. So that, you know, all of that stuff together may be why the numbers aren't the way that you expected them when you were a joint filer.
Oh, and on that note, Mary, we are out of time. Boy, this flew quickly. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it, and I'll look forward to your next visit. Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, her company with her husband David, Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Thank you so much for listening today. It's always a pleasure to be here on WPR News. Big thanks to our whole team for all of the work that they do. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.